welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You could text us at that same number. You guys can call back now, and I'll take you. We'll take you right away. So it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Don from Milwaukee. Good morning, Don. How are you? You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Hey, nice to have you back again.
Well, it was only a day, man.
Yeah, well, hey, I missed you. But anyhow, I just wanted to, I always look forward for Sandy to come on because I consider him the voice of reason. And, and I was really enjoying the show. It stimulates me, because things are going along good until Mr. Perfect from Sussex calls in. See, and I want to point something out. Like Sandy made a statement about we're so worried about what other people think. I believe is, or did I have that wrong? Did Sandy say that we're so worried about what? Or am I? Did I misunderstand that?
I don't know. But
go ahead.
Well, I think that. I don't think I said that, but that might have been the gist of what.
Maybe I misunderstood it. Then I'm sorry. Yeah, but that's the way I took it.
What's your point, Don?
Okay, the point is a perfect example. Mr. Perfect calls in, and he is so worried about what CJ thinks. Well, wait a minute now. This is why we're not having any dialogue, and that's why I find it. That's why I call Sandy the voice of reason, because if we don't have this voice of, we don't have this dialogue soon, we're going to have a civil war. So anyhow, that was my comment, and thank you for allowing me airtime.
Hey Don, thank you very much for the call. As always, I really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, here's a prime example. When we talk about differences between the two sides, and I was looking to see how the GOP says they're going to deal with the issues that we're dealing with inflation and all those other things, and they clearly have stated that They're gonna lower the taxes on the wealthy. Let me say this. This is from here's how a GOP controlled house might tackle inflation, and this is from first what they want to do is they want to pull back on spending. Republicans have rallied against trillions in Democratic-backed spending in areas like coronavirus relief, student loans, and non-defense funding, while framing the policies as part of a pattern of unchecked government spending. But they also are arguing about the debt ceiling. They don't want to raise the debt. They also want to change the energy policies, the direction that Democrats are taking things. In other words, they want to go back to make sure fossil fuel is king. They want to, Sandy, they want the supply chain. Listen to this. Supply chain issues have been seen as a major cause of inflation, though more recently they have been seen as less of an issue. In a policy agenda unveiled by the House Republicans last month, leaders focused on strengthening the nation's supply chains. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, it's a worthy objective if we could, because the shortages that have been created in the supply chain by the supply chain problems has contributed to inflation. But what they aren't saying is that it all sort of began with the trade war, with the tariff war with China, which began to discombobulate the supply chains in a major sort of a way. And then the second major thing that affected it was COVID. And now, if what they want to do is nationalize the supply chain and move away from the the globalization of things in the world, I think they'll find that they're trying to stop a freight train, and it's going to be again an effort to get nostalgia in place rather than reality.
Well, it's one thing to say we're going to fix the supply chain; it's another altogether when somebody asks you how.
Well, yeah, the government doing it would be a highly intrusive process, one which I would think when you get down to brass tacks, how they do it, it would all seem very un-Republican.
Taxes. Republican leaders have also set their sights on tax changes, which some pushing for an extension of tax cuts that Donald Trump had in 2017. Okay, so that's going to fix the economy, Sandy. Tax cuts. They also want to increase...
Well, incidentally, tax cuts are inflationary. Just, I think the heading on this article is how will the new Congress control inflation? Tax cuts are exactly why Ms. Truss is no longer the Prime Minister of England, because she came into office and enacted a big tax cut in a time of high inflation, and she's what, 6 or 7 weeks into her and now she's out. Yeah. Because you know what, the world, the finance community, all these people who were sensible looked at that and said, that's not going to work. And so, you know, in fact, one of the things we can talk about in another show, but this parliamentary process that can shake up government as quickly as happens in England is a demonstration of some of the sensibility of it, actually, because when people get off in a stupid policy direction, there are mechanisms to keep it from happening, number one. Number two, the way they select their leaders sort of diffuses some of the problems that are created by populism, and we're beginning to see across the world some of the dangers that are created by this sort of charismatic populist leader that tends to always lead in the direction of autocracy.
So this is the last thing I want to say before we move on to a different topic. Excuse me. They're going to fix inflation. You know, and you asked them how and what, you know, how are they going to do that? There's no answer to that.
Well, apparently they're going to get to cut taxes.
So, I mean, just
good,
so people
good luck
are
with
aware.
That. Yeah.
Just so people are aware, people say anything, right?
Well, you know, interestingly, since probably 1900, the Republican Party has announced that it has stood for fiscal, that they are the strong party on government fiscal policy, and that they should be the party in power in order to make sure that prosperity reigns. But actually, if you look at the history book as to what has happened to the economy during the period of Republican reign from 1900 to the present, and you look at under what presidents the national debt, it was increased the most other than during World War II, and if you look at the general economic circumstance that each of those presidents left the country in, you'll find out that history does not bear out this concept that putting the Republicans in charge is a way to assure economic prosperity.
You know, Sandy, so now I want to move to Ukraine, and you know, just because it's not on the front page of the paper does not mean that this situation is not getting more and more tense. Russian media says Ukraine's HIMARS hit hydroelectric power plant. Now, there's threats being made by Putin to blow up a dam.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, what's happening now is we've got this war of theories of what might happen in the future, and it's usually all veiled threats, and it's sometimes it's kind of notions that either could be threats or false flag notions. The Russians are floating this concept publicly, that done by the I think it was their Secretary of Defense, that Ukraine, they say, is on the verge of blowing up a dirty bomb in Ukraine as a way to essentially point a finger at Russia for having committed a nuclear act, a nuclear war act inside Ukraine. And And then Ukraine, both Ukraine and Russia, are accusing the other of intending to attack this hydroelectric dam, which would have a huge impact on the downstream city that's there. And so, once again, we have to understand that war zones are filled with all this disinformation. But my concern is that the disinformation now is at a level that includes very harmful conduct. And who it's attributed to is maybe going to be less important than the fact that it might happen.
So let's then go here, because we have a guy who calls in and he says, you know, we're in Ukraine because of you know, democracy and what's happening there, what they've done to Ukraine is not right, it's not fair, and so that's why we're there. You were talking earlier before we came on the air about Haiti.
Yeah.
And people don't know what's taking place there.
Well, I mean, you know,
and it gets zero air time because it's only Haiti.
Well, I mean, I think the problem is that we talk about things in international affairs that are essentially our government presents to us as things that we should talk about. So that Ukraine sort of sprang up on us because our government decided that they would essentially stick our nose into that process in a very deep sort of a way. But meanwhile, the Western Hemisphere. What is one of the main political issues in the Western Hemisphere as far as America is concerned? Immigration. Why are there so many Latin Americans trying to get into America? It's because our hemisphere, our backyard, has a bunch of countries that are a mess. But are we actively sticking our nose into their business to try and improve their lot? I mean, if we want to cut down on immigration, the main thing we would do is try to make sure that the Western Hemisphere was as healthy as possible in every conceivable way. And then you get to Haiti. Haiti is an unbelievable...
Well, it's been a mess for... forever.
It's a humanitarian disaster. Right. It's a political vacuum. It's a place where gangs have taken over. There will be lots of Haitians who want to come into America, guaranteed.
Every time they tried it, turned around immediately.
Yeah. So, and that's just an example. It's not the only example.
Right.
And the other examples are not so familiar to us because we don't have much of it presented to us. And it might be infrequently presented to us by some adventurous New York Times journalist who'd go off, write a story, and that's the end of it. If we wanted to devote our resources to things that mattered to America, we'd be spending a lot more of our resources and time in the Western Hemisphere and not...
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, you just look at these things that we can fix and things that we can make a difference. Our nation can make a difference. And Central America is one where we can make a difference.
Well, I mean, you look at... If we were interested in the security interest of America, there's a lot of politicians who are running on the basis that the immigration problem at our border to the south is a huge security problem for America. I don't buy the notion that it's a huge security problem. But for those who do, who embrace it as a real security problem, then it is a much more real security problem than the Ukraine was, or than Taiwan is, and it's certainly a bigger security problem than Afghanistan was after the 18 months that it took us to quell Al-Qaeda, and we stayed there for another 18 years. So the money we spent in Iraq, erroneously, the money we spent in Afghanistan is trillion of dollars, you know? If that money had been focused on what was actually fundamentally important to America, like the Western Hemisphere and the South Americas and Latin America, we could have made a major difference. We might not have the hundreds of thousands of immigrants knocking at the door that want to get, come here because we should. Why do they want to come to America? It's because where they're living is so messed up, and yet we seem to be having a hands-off policy associated with all of those problems.
Well, you know, former President Donald Trump referred to their nations as S-hole nations. You know,
yeah,
and so yeah, they are. I mean, but how did it happen? You know, I mean, those nations, you know, were able to survive with their produce and the other things that they had, and so they had something to offer, but they can't even do that anymore because. That's all somebody else is controlling all of those things.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, corruption is a huge problem. Rule of law is a huge problem. It remains a big problem in Ukraine. We currently are closing our eyes to it because of our enthusiasm, apparently, for Ukraine. But, you know, Ukraine, when we looked at it in the early 1990s, we were afraid to have them have a hold of any nuclear weapons because we knew they would sell them to the highest bidder. And corruption is rampant in Latin America and South America, and it's the reason why these governments are sideways, and it's the reason why the lives of the people in those countries aren't very good.
So let me go back to Ukraine for a moment. The winter is fastly approaching. There's conversation about finally, you know, NATO offering air power to Ukraine. And the winter's approaching. So all of this is going to slow down, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of horrifying to watch a war like this. And it's sort of, you know, from our standpoint, We're almost spectators of it, except that this war is having a worldwide impact. So, in a way, it's a world war because it is having a worldwide impact. And what's going to happen going forward is always worrisome because it is true that Russia was exercising its power in this war with some kind with restraint. There was a restraint associated with what it was doing with civilian targets. There was a restraint with what it was doing with respect to infrastructure targets. And a lot of that restraint had to do with the fact that they were going to have to deal with Ukraine after the war. And so the longer we sustain Ukraine in its defense of the country, the more likely it is that this war in Ukraine is going to create an outcome which is essentially unsustainable and will continue to destabilize the world situation as the result of the enmity that will continue to exist vis-a-vis the Russian Federation, that will continue to exist in a destabilized Ukraine. We've got to come up with an end game for Ukraine that is good for the world, okay? That is good for America, that is hopefully that optimizes to the extent possible the situation for the Ukrainians. But we should understand that Ukrainians are in a suboptimal position, and we might have suboptimized it by helping them create an environment that was a war with Russia rather than a treaty with Russia, because a treaty with Russia might not have been anything like as bad as the outcome that might come from this.
So Sandy, we're the winter's coming. We already know Europe's going to suffer, as you stated, the brunt of the prices of heating and all those things. Everybody's going to be touched by it. And surely nothing's going to change during the winter. All the suffering and financial, you know, angst that's going to continue is going to be ramped up even more during the winter months as people.
There's no question that Russia has the capacity to destroy the infrastructure for the civilians in Ukraine such that winter will be devastating. They can. It's no problem. To knock out electric power plants. No problem at all in a war. Easy targets. And all the transmission lines. I mean, they can knock out the electricity. They can stop the delivery of gas to Ukraine. Ukraine gets most of its gas from Russia. They can turn that off. So, I mean, there's plenty of ways to strangle Ukraine in the circumstance of war. I mean, let's face it, America's main strategy in many of our political wars has been the blockade. It's been the strangulation of a country. It's what we did to Cuba. It's what we're doing to Russia right now. The sanctions are, in essence, an effort to strangle Russia.
All right, got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. You know... Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, the economy. Democrats really put all their marbles and eggs into one basket on abortion. And they just assumed that abortion was going to be that one thing that was going to make the difference.
Well, I think this. I think, like I've said before, I think it was a dog-chasing car, and the dog loved to chase the car but had no intention of catching it and could rally all the other dogs that like chasing cars to do it with the knowledge that they weren't going to catch it, and so that it could always be good sport, because catching it was going to be a real problem. And I think that for those who have been talking about this abortion issue for so long, it was a rallying cry. But the rallying cry was for a particular audience, and that particular audience then could become very strongly tied, and it didn't have a lot of downside. People weren't necessarily going to not participate in the election on that side just because some people were doing it on this abortion issue. They would have other reasons to tie their wagon, to hitch onto that wagon. Now, with the Doe case, they caught the car. And now the implications of catching the car are settling in. And the polling has always been that a strong majority of Americans favored the notion that a woman should have control over her body, okay, and should have control over these decisions, not the government. That government intrusion into that process was improper, which, of course, sounds like a libertarian conservative view of things. They caught the car. And now, from the political standpoint, the state of Kansas and others are revealing that this inclination on the part of women is a very, very powerful one, and they're going to be very upset about the notion that abortion ought to be barred and made criminal in so many states. And someone like Tim Michaels could talk about how he wasn't a radical because he was not going to propose that there be searches of people at the border checks to keep people from leaving Wisconsin to go have abortions.
But the question becomes whether or not that is going to be a strong enough issue in enough people's lives that they vote strongly on that issue, when again, there's so many people who are struggling, the food prices and the prices of gasoline and inflation, all this stuff is real.
Well, everyone's got to stand back and figure out what the facts are and what they care about and what they can impact. And you know, is it how many? I don't know. Emotional level, though, I think it's caught a real chord with people.
You mean the abortion
issue, and it's going to bring a bunch of people out to vote, and they're going to vote on that issue now. About inflation. I mean, there are undoubtedly people who are upset about inflation. It's always been the rule that that when the economy is bad, incumbents suffer.
Right.
But there are so many factors associated with this inflation that thoughtful people might well look at this and try to work that through in their own mind.
The operative word, thoughtful people. But people who again, not being thoughtful, they know that the price of bread is starting and the price of eggs is starting to be an issue, starting to be a problem.
Yeah.
And the price of milk. And I'm telling you, man, even for me, you know, as somebody who's never really looked at the prices of those things, I see that.
No, there's no question. Inflation is an issue, and inflation that the
horror for rent and those things.
The horrible thing about inflation is that the people who suffer from it the most are Tom, Dick, and Mary.
Right.
And the people who are asked to fix it by sacrificing are Tom, Dick, and Mary.
Right.
Because that's the way our policies work in terms of being anti-inflationary. You got to take money out of Tom, Dick, and Mary's pocket so they can't pay for the stuff that's getting more expensive, and therefore the prices don't go up.
So when we're talking about elections.
Yes. I mean, clearly, but the problem is that Tom, Dick, and Mary, I hope, will open their eyes to the fact that the issue that's being, that this inflation issue is being caused by a bunch of things, many of which cannot be attributed to either party, but to the extent they could be attributed to political conduct, it's the Republicans are at least as culpable as the Democrats with respect to their policies. The big tax cut policies were inflationary. The huge deficits run during the Trump administration, during a growth period, a strong growth period, were highly inflationary. We had bottled up inflation. The implementation of the trade policy and the tariff policy against China, which bottled up and screwed up began the process of bottling up the supply chain, was inflationary. And so, you know, and the treatment of the pandemic. The pandemic was inflationary in terms of its effect. The world is experiencing inflation, more inflation than the United States. So we could stand back and look at all those facts. But yes, unfortunately, incumbents always get stuck with the current day reality being blamed on them.
So, you know, the fact that the Republicans are blaming the Democrats for, you know, doing what had to be done in order to, after COVID, to get things moving, people benefited from that.
Well, incidentally, those were bipartisan. The stimulus that came after COVID was bipartisan. And, you know, and you know, there have been subsequent
but
to
that's
that.
That's not the way it's being.
No, it's being portrayed because there was subsequent to that a Democratic expenditure bill, the infrastructure bill, which I think was bipartisan as well. And of all the bills that have created possibly a massive demand for workers, it was the infrastructure bill. You know, a big factor for inflation right now is the fact that we're doing all of these highway programs everywhere in the country. You know, drive around Milwaukee, you know?
Well, everywhere.
Everywhere.
And yet they're pushing back and saying that we didn't have to have these things done.
Right.
Look, you know, Sandy, COVID, for the most part, is, you know, that dog of hell, that hound of hell that nobody's talking about anymore. And we almost forget that that occurred, right?
Yeah.
Well, it did happen. And the decisions that were made back then were decisions that had to happen, would you say?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, the government is always doing things without a playbook, right? So there hadn't been a COVID before. What's the playbook for dealing with it? It was invented on the fly, and it was invented by both parties. And you know, was it done perfectly? Undoubtedly not. But it was done in the best possible way as they knew it, and it was also a bipartisan response. And so to turn that into political blame game is just inappropriate. But again, I just think the more we can wake people up to thinking and the more we can make them look at things that should really matter to them in the long run, I think the more they would look away from the current inflation as being something that they would blame the Democratic Party enough for to vote in each office on a Republican Party basis. For instance, Ron Johnson. I mean, the only legitimate argument I think that a sober Republican could make for reelecting Ron Johnson is because he's a Republican vote in the Senate, and they want to sustain Republican policies or at least defeat Democratic policies in the Senate. Nobody suggests that Ron Johnson is a good U.S. senator. They always just talk about the fact that he needs to get elected because he's a Republican vote. Well, the Republicans, many of the policies we're talking about, that just as you pointed out with respect to how will Republicans handle the economy, aren't going to be good for any better for the economy than Democrats. In fact, in my book, over the long history of things, the Republicans have been far worse for the economy and for long-term prosperity.
Well, because even if the Republicans retake the House and the Senate, they're going to run into the same filibuster issue,
yeah,
that the Democrats have run into, so they're not going to be able to make all these great changes that they're talking about, and Joe Biden with a veto pen.
Well, yeah, but incidentally, if we look back just in recent history with Democrats, the two presidents who left the economy in far better condition than they found
Bill
it
Clinton.
Since 1990 are Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
They inherited economies that were in really very dire shape.
True.
From Republican presidents, and they became much stronger during their tenure in both cases. And both cases were kind of record growth periods. I mean, everyone looks at the Obama period and forgets the fact that he inherited a huge financial crisis, which in turn was handled quite well when his term ended. The president who was going to succeed him was going to have a prosperous, growing economy handed to him, and that is what happened with Donald Trump.
Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, Bill, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, and I love the topic. Sam, inflation, America has the ability to control inflation, but they don't have the desire. Here's what I mean, and stop me the minute I make an incorrect statement. The oil companies right now have a wealth of oil. They don't have to drill anymore. They don't have any pipelines. They have it in the ground. They could produce oil at half the cost. They're going to still make great profits. They have record profits this year. How do I know this for a fact? Because even though I don't agree with all of it, my retirement is based on investments. And the one thing I'm invested in is oil companies. My best stocks this year are oil companies. They're doing exceptionally well. So all this stuff that Biden shut down the pipeline and Biden released the oil reserves, all the oil company has to do, and we have to pressure them by legislation, or not legislation, but by bringing it to light, this idea that Biden stopped them. No, he didn't. We've got more than enough. Do you know we export oil as I speak? We were exporting oil to France. So this idea that we don't have enough oil, the minute they do that, if they did it, our inflation rate would be just what, I mean, we wouldn't be talking about it. Am I right or wrong? I'll hang up and listen to your replies.
Well, thank you, Bill.
Well, you're definitely right that the oil companies have in their hands the capacity to produce more oil. And so from the standpoint of, to the extent that the gasoline price and the oil price is contributing to inflation, you're right. It isn't the only factor in inflation. So, you know, were there to be, you know, and in fact, during the period when the gasoline price was dropping, it dropped, $1.60, I think,
right,
in a six-week period in the last 2 months. During that period, we continued to have inflation, but the inflation was moderated by the fact that gasoline prices were dropping. But our core inflation, which takes out of the measurement of inflation the energy inflation and I think the rent costs, when you look at core inflation, we continue to have a core inflation problem because the problem is we do have shortages. And, you know, the public ought to understand that shortages are not the result of government conduct. The shortages we have in the supply chain, the shortages we have out there are not the result of government conduct. The shortages of workers in all of these areas that we currently have, which are creating shortages of supplies and also creating increases in wages as a result of the shortages, these are not the result of government conduct. So the notion that we should unelect the incumbents because of these circumstances is to kick the dog, which I think is an expression. You kick the dog when you're mad at somebody else, and the only thing you've got there that you can take your anger out on is the dog. Right.
All right. Thank you very much, call, Bill. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. Oh.
It's far from Friday, Earl.
It's Monday.
You'll get this right.
Yeah. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And I hate to bring this up, but the main COVID symptoms have changed, research shows. And I hate to be bringing up and talking about COVID, but COVID is still there. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, patients have reported dozens of different symptoms, ranging from cold and flu-like symptoms to more unique ones, including COVID tongue. But like all viruses, the primary symptoms associated with COVID have changed and can vary based on your vaccination status, according to the new list released last week. The Zoe Health Study, a joint effort by researchers at Massachusetts General Hospital, the Harvard Chan School of Public Health, King's College, London, Stanford University School of Medicine, and Health App Zoe, shared an updated list of the top COVID symptoms symptoms currently being reported by its participants.
What are they? Are they a cold?
Fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
Sore throat.
Mm.
Runny nose.
Mm.
Blocked nose. Persistent cough and headache. Partially vaccinated. Headache. Runny nose. Sore throat, sneezing, persistent cough, unvaccinated. Headache, sore throat, runny nose, fever, persistent cough. Among fully vaccinated participants, symptoms frequently reported earlier on the pandemic were less prevalent, like the loss of smell, fever, and shortness of breath. So it's changed. It's morphed. Let's go to the phone lines quickly. Wisco Paul, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Thanks for taking my call. Excuse me. I love it when you and Sandy are together. I got a quick question. If we go to one-party rule in this state, which I hope doesn't happen, we have a really nice surplus on hand. And will that give Michaels a chance to do whatever he wants, including flat taxes, schools, and spend that money wherever he wants? There won't be nothing to stop him. Am I correct in that? Thanks for taking my call.
Hold on, Wisco Paul. Repeat that.
Can you, explain what you're talking about for the listening audience and for me? What are you referring to?
Well, we have a real nice surplus in the Treasury in state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, the governor doesn't have discretion to spend a surplus. The money has to be spent consistent with the budget.
Okay, that's good news. And then, but will they be able to just like, because they would have full control, would they be able to just vote in a flat tax and pretty much anything they want to do?
Well, I mean, when you elect a legislature and a governor, they're free to elect. They're free to enact any laws that are constitutional. And so, sure, a flat tax is a possibility.
Well, that's not good news. But at least the surplus, they'll have to spend that as per everybody in the state wants it spent. They're not going to be able to just willy-nilly it. That's my point.
Well, yeah. You know, hopefully, many Republicans are saying return it to the taxpayers.
Well, you know, it's interesting when we have opportunities to do things for the state of Wisconsin that would be painless or essentially painless to the state, you know, we passed up under Walker this high-speed train from Chicago to Madison. And when you look at the world now, you realize what a huge valued asset that would be. And he passed it up because I think he thought there might be a $7 million a year subsidy that would have to be paid to it. And you look at how much money we spend on an off-ramp on a road, you realize that $7 million is nothing when you're dealing right. with that kind of infrastructure. And so, you know, it just would be a shame if we don't find ways to invest that money. I mean, I think if we just use it in
Can
ways...
Can they invest it?
Well, I mean, I don't mean invest it in stocks. Okay. I mean invest it in worthwhile things.
Right.
You know, in things that have an enduring value to our children and grandchildren.
And that we have ignored.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, that to me is the shame of the way we've operated our governments for the last 20 or 30 years, is we fail to think about doing things that have an enduring value into the future, and we've basically been using it money for bandages to patch up the things that were given to us.
Wisco, Paul?
Yeah, I was just concerned about that because the Republicans... They're in the private schools, and under the last administration, they didn't fix the roads up. But I'm fearful of a one-party rule. That's what I'm talking about.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. What's go, Paul? Should we do it? I'll do it. Let's give CJ the last shot at it. CJ?
Oh, golly.
I'm sorry, guys. Before your last break, you were talking gas prices, and I guess I find it funny that it's never the president's fault when it's a Democrat, but it's always the president's fault when a Republican. Well, look at the gas prices before this president went into office, and on day one,
CJ, how many times has
an executive order, Sandy?
We've been down this road,
yeah,
CJ.
Thank you for the call,
no,
CJ.
No, you haven't. You avoid it. You avoid it.
Yes, you know, Sandy. I don't know how many times you've explained that it has nothing to do with the president.
Well, what I've said is that executive order was going to have an effect on long-term supply of oil, but it didn't have really any, and it had something to do with the spot price because it reacts to that. But basically, refining capacity is what is throttling the availability of gasoline in this country, and so that's a totally different issue. But we're coming to the end. I think I've enjoyed our show today, Earl. I think this has been helpful, and I was really kind of inspired by that call we got from, I've forgotten his name now, but
I think it was clearly, you know, there's a lot to talk about, and all of us need to kind of look in ourselves and see what we ourselves can do. To have a dialogue and a conversation that's fruitful, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's the whole purpose. Got to go. Thank everybody who made the show go. Sandy, get some rest. I'll be back on tomorrow. Oh, I'm doing a live remote tomorrow from No Studios. See you tomorrow. No Studios. 844-967-2789. I'm going to be on the air, but I'll be doing it from No Studios in Milwaukee. See you later. Don't get to